straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 170, brought to you by Hook'em.com, our really good friends at Bud Light. My name is Cedric Golden, and I'm joined by the Duck, Kirk Bowles. And wow, Kirk, you know, Black History Month's almost over, and we should celebrate it 12 months out of the year. But I'm telling you, man, we've got a great guest for today. Longhorn legend Andre Robertson joins us via phone. How are you, sir?
I am doing well, and I'll take that legend part with a grain of salt.
No grain of salt. Mm-hmm. You are a true legend.
First African-American athlete recruited for baseball at Texas. Scholarship player. Coach Gus reached in and plucked you out of, was it the Golden Triangle? Is that what they call it?
That's it.
West Orange. West Orange. And this,
that's it.
Cedric, this guy was a stud. Yeah, I mean, you were a quarterback, weren't you?
I did play quarterback.
And basketball?
Basketball and track along with baseball.
He did it all, Cedric.
Tried to be all-around guy.
He did it all. I tell you what, and the thing I remember about Andre back in the 1970s when he was here, what was your first year, 76, 77? What was your first year? 70,
that was it, 76, 77.
Yeah, this guy was so smooth. And so cool. He was just nothing ever bothered. They invented the term laid back for Andre Robertson. Why were you so cool and smooth, Andre?
Well, that's how I learned to play. And then, you know, when I first got to UT, I was a shortstop.
Right.
So the only position open was second base.
Right.
That's why I always tell Mr. Sweet, no Bill, but hey, you got me to the big league. He'll say, no, you did that on your own. I said, well, I was that big old lump of clay, and you refined me. And so the way he taught me to play, that's how it ended up turning out. So, you know, I love playing the game, so I didn't let anything bother me. I always wanted the ball at all times. So when you look at it that way, it's easy to be, you know, where it doesn't look like it bothers you, but
well, you didn't.
And it never did.
It didn't look like it was work either. That's what I mean by that smooth and easy. Said, I mean, this guy, he was, you know, the best second baseman I've ever seen at Texas were Andre and Bill Bates. You remember Bill Bates came along later?
Right, and I talked to Bill right before the Hall of Honor celebration too. So
awesome.
You know, you get back and then you get in that fraternity. You remember everybody, you know, as you follow the team, that helps in that respect too.
Well, talk to us about coming to Texas. So what, refresh our memories on why you chose Texas when, you know, they had not had a black scholarship baseball player. Why'd you pick Texas, Andre?
Right. Well, when I was up, I was in Austin for the state track meet. I was a high jumper. I think I'm 5'10". I ended up jumping 6'7". I won a bronze medal. I think I was the shortest person there. Okay, and I didn't know how to flop, so I just ran and jumped over the bar. I think they called it the Western Row. Well, when I was up there, I think they had heard about me because, you know, we'd been to Austin in 74 for the state tournament in baseball. And while I was there, somebody called me. I was at the football stadium, so I went and looked at the weight room. And my story, and it's not a story, this is actual fact. I walked in, first person I see was Brad Shearer. He's what, 280 pounds?
I don't know if he's that big. It was huge.
And you know, it's small by the terms today, but I walked a little farther down and I saw this guy with these 34-inch thighs. And I'm looking at myself. I'm 5'10", 155 pounds, soaking wet, right?
Uh-huh.
I'm not playing football anymore. So he said, well, let's go over and look at the baseball field. When I walked in, I said, I want to play here.
No, nice.
That was a state-of-the-art field, AstroTurf. It was awesome. And now today, it's a whole lot different, but at that time, that field was awesome. I said I would love to play.
Yeah, just opened in 75, so it was pretty much brand new. You're right.
You know what, Duck? And then the guy with the 34-inch thighs was Earl Campbell.
Yeah.
People don't know.
There weren't a whole lot of those, were there?
Well, you know what, Andre? You had, just a wonderful career. One of the best middle tandems in all of college baseball with you and Ron Gardenhire, who was at shortstop.
Right.
Unlike a lot of your teammates, you had to go through some things coming to Texas, and you're from South Texas, I'm from East Texas, so we both know what racism is, and you had to endure some things. How tough was it being that pioneer, that first guy? And nowadays, if a white guy says something to us, we can take a swing at him if we want, but back then, did you have to hold your tongue more than you had wanted to?
I did, and it was, I think, as I look back at it, I think I was born to be the one to do it, because you've seen a little of my story. I was the first, say African-American kid to play here in Orange, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I was the first African-American to play on my high school team. So it's one of those things, and my dad instilled it in me, don't start anything you can't finish. So the best way to do that was not speaking out with my mouth, but with my actions. So play the game as it should be played. And I learned every year, because I didn't know what baseball was when I first started playing. So my idea was, hey, learn to play this game right and good things will happen to you. And I think that is what happened.
You know, and you had a good role model in one Jackie Robinson, and then you had another in Muhammad Ali. How did those guys help you go through what at times had to be tough in your transition to the University of Texas?
Well, they were big role models, and, I read books on Jackie and what he went through and the type things he had to do. Of course, Muhammad Ali was a little more outspoken and more brash than,
yeah, a little bit.
Jackie was. But, you learn, and that's what my dad taught me. In fact, he was the first person that got all that in me. You look at the good in everyone and try to put that into your life. If there is something a little off from that, you don't worry about that. You do the things that are good, and good things will happen.
Well, how much racism did you endure while you were here, Andre? And how did you deal with it?
At UT, I tell you what, I had a great time. I had teammates that had my back, and so I didn't really have to deal with a lot of it at UT. There was some, but it was more so going on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I said, I think I have told a couple of people, and some people have gotten on me, you keep bashing Baylor, I'm saying. Well, I'm not bashing just Baylor. I just thought there is where I heard the most stuff and where they really tried to get on me. But when I played baseball in between those white lines, what I heard was the ball hitting the glove, the ball hitting a bat, me catching it, throwing someone out at first. So that's what I did. It's like I put the emphasis on making plays rather than hearing what people were saying.
So you just blocked it out.
That's it.
Yeah.
I think I was one of those that I zoned out stuff, with the best of them. In fact, I've been told that kind of by my wife now, because you put that into life, you can zone out things, that's not in baseball. And, like I said, it's like to be successful, it's not going to be good. You're just just kind of lashing out at folks. It's listening. And because you can't learn anything if you're talking all the time.
True.
You have to listen to actually learn and to get better.
So you got called the N-word and other names when you were at Baylor and other places that y'all went to?
Oh, that and names I hadn't heard. So
wow.
I had a story. One of my high school classmates, when I went to the University of Houston, I didn't hear it, but I met some of her friends, and they were telling me they were just throwing everything at me like that. First time up, I think I hit a double off the center field wall. So I came up again, same thing. They're yelling all this stuff, and I hit another one. like probably about the same spot. So they said, well, I guess that stuff doesn't work on this kid. we're not worried about it. And no, these guys became attorneys. So I was talking to them at the game, and I didn't even realize they had said that, but they admitted to me that they did that. And, you know, all sports is like that. People try to get in your head.
Right.
And if you let them do it, it's gonna affect how you play. And like I said, when I was playing my job and I came up with that term, you're going to hit the ball to me, take a right turn at first base.
Go back to the dugout.
That's it. Yeah. Take a right turn, go back to the dugout. And as I said, it's like I use that. Call me what you want. Hit it to me. Double play in the game. That's how I would talk back.
I love it. I love it. You know, that 1979 team was a special team under Coach Gus. 2-2 at the College World Series. You beat UConn, Mississippi State, lost to Arkansas, and Pepperdine in the semis. Jerry Don Gleaton, Joe Bruno, Ricky Wright, Terry Salazar, Keith Walker. Do you keep up with those guys? Because I know a lot of them are still kicking around.
We do. And it's been times like we've had dove hunts and other events. And when we get together, it's almost like we're still in Jester.
Man, I love that.
Jester or our apartment. So,
right.
In fact, the four roommates, myself, Jim Cesar, Ricky Nixon, and Kyle Fauntleroy, we've been to like each other's weddings, each other's anniversaries. And so I think we were probably closer than anybody else. In fact, what made one of the things easiest for me to do was Jim Cesar actually asked to be my roommate. Because we had both played in that high school all-star game in the Astrodome.
Right.
And I didn't really find this out till later. And I just attended his dad's funeral last year. So that's what I mean. All four of us were there, at the funeral.
Wow.
We've been very close friends ever since.
That's love.
And he was a brother of Brian Cesaric, wasn't he?
He was, and I kind of felt bad about it because I was a shortstop. As I said, Jim was a second baseman.
Yeah.
I learned that position, and he really never played.
Yeah.
But we remained friends throughout the whole thing, and Jim Cesaric is one of the greatest guys you will ever meet.
That's awesome.
I want to give him his props and shout out because that made that transition very easy. Someone asking to be your roommate, and no, we've only met that one occasion.
So. Wow, that's impressive. And that was a really great team. Jerry Don Gleaton ended up making the major leagues. Ronnie Gardenhire, famous baseball manager. And the next year, the year after you left in 79, he hit 10 RBIs in one game against Arkansas and broke his thumb in that game and didn't play again. His season was over.
Right. Well, he did that. He did it that one year, I think.
Yeah,
we were there. I remember that.
Yeah, and Rick and Kim Wright, they were crazy, weren't they, Ricky?
Oh, they are. And look, Rick, in fact, just called me when I was up for the Hall of Honor induction and the game. I guess I went in the booth with Keith and Greg Swindell.
Nice.
So they were calling me and saying, now you're trying to be a movie star or something too, right? I said, no, I'm just up here. They asked me to come. And then, just that story, like I said, is one of those I'm very proud of what was accomplished for the university and for the guys coming through. And I know you guys probably saw the interview with Cameron Fields.
Yes,
awesome
I did.
Kid.
Yeah, he's a lovely kid.
I talk with all of them. I talk with everybody. I know we have a gentleman who's a center fielder who's kind of crazy, too, from my mother's hometown, so of Nacogdoches. And I'm like, you never know who you're going to touch just talking to people or, trying to be a good person, being kind. And I think that's how you better yourself and get along better in the world.
Well, before we leave your UT career, you want to explain your afro to me? I mean, you had the coolest looking afro, and I don't remember any of the afros on Coach Gus's team back then when you were playing. Did Gus ever say anything about your hair?
He really didn't, because, you know, back then,
that was the style.
Yes, sir, that was the style.
Like, I look at my hair now, I'm glad that style has gone, because now I cut it very short. I can get up, wave my hair in the wind, and just go about my business.
You know, I don't have any, so go ahead. Yeah, keep bragging, Andre. I don't have any hair.
Right. We use those Afro Sheen blowouts.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So you put that stuff in, let it sit a little while, and I'll never forget that commercial where it goes, Afro Sheen blowout kit. No, and you put it in, wait a little bit, and it goes tick, tick, tick.
And then it blew up.
Then boom. There it goes. And it's, you know, I always said, when I look at the picture they put up, y'all could have used a better picture. But at the time, that's what, you know, the hair looked like. So it was during that time. I know I messed up a lot of caps. You know, putting all of that stuff in
there.
That
glycerin.
You know, that's it. But it was a great time. No, we kid about it all the time. Now I look like I have those puff balls some of the women can put on and sticking out the side of the cap.
You got to school Kirk to it.
Right.
Back in the day, Doug, that's what we did. Uh-huh. That's before Activator, right, and all Jerry Curls and all of that.
Right.
And right. Kirk, you watch Welcome Back, Kotter.
Oh, sure.
And the black dude on there, Lawrence Hilton Jacobs, was Freddie Boom Boom Washington. Yeah, Mr. Cocktail. And so Freddie Boom Boom Washington was Freddie Boom Boom Washington because he got a blowout kit and it went boom and he had that big fro.
Right.
So that's where it came from. And Juan Epstein, I don't know if that was a fro, but the other kid, but that it was very close. But Freddie Boom Boom Washington was, we all wanted hair like him and Michael Jackson. The Jacksons had those fros too.
In fact, Epstein had the hairdo like the center fielder later named Mike Satterpeck. We become pretty good friends over the years too. He had that big fro.
Oh, man.
Did any of your kids see pictures of you with the fro? I wonder what they thought about it, your kids.
Oh, they see it all the time. And, you know, my kids they're good kids, but, you know, dad gets tired sometimes. You know how you're talking and just sit there and kind of pass out. I've been on many of their photos they passed around, so they tired watching them laughing at them and knocked out. So they're some fun kids. It's been a good life for me. My wife's been very successful. My son, in fact, I brought that up, he became the first African-American valedictorian at West Orange Star.
Oh, I love that.
Wow.
That's congrats.
It keeps going and keeps going. And like I said, that's what you want. So you can say a legacy that is making life better for people that follow you.
Yes, sir.
Which son was that was valedictorian?
His name is Ryan.
Ryan.
He went to Texas A&M. Which I'm a lifelong Longhorn, but I am an Aggie dad. So, you know, he graduated from Lamar, went to Southern 1 year in Baton Rouge, then he graduated from the University of Houston.
Okay.
You know, that place I mentioned earlier, law school. So,
well, you had another kid. What was his name? Jace? Is that his name?
Jace. Jace was I thought he was going to be smarter. And he was probably more in the athletics than Ryan, but he ended up unfortunately having diabetes. So, but he's made life better for him. He's still trying to figure it out. He's 24 now, so we're trying to figure out where he's wanting to go.
He's got time.
That's where he's got time. So, right now he works at a restaurant in Houston called Grace's. He's meeting a lot of celebrities. I've eaten there. Mm. That place is awesome.
Wow.
So is hopefully he can get settled on what he wants to do. But right now, I think he's settled on making a little money.
It's all about making
that.
A living.
I love it.
So let's talk about your Yankee career a little bit. I know, you know, it was cut short by your horrible accident, but the time you spent with the Yankees, I mean, you know, you and Willie Randolph, and I mean, you were just blowing up as shortstop when, you know, Willie came on as a second baseman, and you guys were going to be the tandem forever and ever, weren't y'all?
The R&R team.
R&R.
Rest and relaxation. Robertson Randolph. And we had a lot of things like that. But, you know, that's that's part of game injuries. Of course, in 1983, I had a car wreck. I broke my neck.
Right.
I made it back from that, and that's it's like the resiliency and the want to. We call it want to, whatever you want to make it back.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people think that ruined my career. It did hurt it a lot, but I had made it back. In fact, 2 years later, in 85, I hit 328.
Wow.
So, but I had hurt my knee. In fact, I still have that torn ACL. That's what really got me out of the game.
Mm.
So, but that's part of the game. I got up and because Bucky Dent hurt his wrist. So here I am, a 24-year-old, playing in the World Series. You know, I wasn't a starter, but I did get in a game. And it was like, I'm mm-hmm. thinking back on all of the great players that never got to play in the World Series.
Mm, oh, yeah.
So being fortunate, you know, like I said, it's like, you know, Dad says you be humble and good
mm-hmm.
things will come too, because I am a big believer in not bragging on myself. That's why I've had trouble in this business world, because that's how you get promoted and whatever. But
yeah.
I figure I'm going to let how I do my job will get me good things. And it has to a certain extent. But sometimes you have to brag on yourself. And I found that hard. I really have.
Oh, yeah. You always did.
Not your time.
Yeah. Try to do that. So.
But what was life like in New York and being with the Yankees? What was that life?
That was awesome. You know, and when I first went up, I was drafted by Toronto.
Right.
I didn't know that next season I'm with New York Yankees. I'm saying, now how am I going to make it to the major leagues when I can't win an expansion team and I'm going to one of the most storied teams ever?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my first manager was Dennis Meeke. You know, a lot of people may not remember, but he's came up with Cincinnati, and he was the Houston Astros.
That's right.
Third baseman.
That's right.
Well, he told me one night, well, Robbie, if you belong in the big leagues, you're going to get there. It may not be with the team you're with, but you'll get there. And that's how I went about it. It's like when I went up to Toronto, I went up to AAA. We played Columbus, which was the Yankees AAA team in the playoffs, and I had a good series. In fact, Gene Michael, who was the manager of that AAA team, was one of the higher-ups in the Yankee system.
Right.
We were beating them or tied, the bottom of the eighth. Guy named Danny Schmidt hits the ball in the hole. I pick it up and throw a bullet across the first. Well, our first baseman was Boomer Wells, they called him, who had a good career. He didn't even jump, and I think the ball went 20 rows in the stands. So the next guy gets up, hits a little single to center. He came up, got the ball, threw it way up the first baseline. They beat us in the playoffs, and I think that's how I got to New York. That's part of it, because Gene Michael said I had a good arm.
That's funny.
So there we go.
That's funny. And
you know, but
what other memories did you have?
To New York,
yeah.
From start, I went back to single A. You know, a lot of players, I think, would have probably been mad and not performed, but it made me want to play harder.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked my way back, went up to AAA, helped them win, went to AA, helped them win, went back up to AAA. And we won, you know, the championship again. That was a string of 3 years in a row we did it, because 81 I was up the whole time. Made International League All-Star shortstop. It's still hard for me to say a lot of this stuff, but it's kind of what happened. And
facts
at the end
are facts.
Of that year, I got called up to the World Series.
So wow. And
worked hard.
Do you always pinch yourself wearing the pinstripes? I mean, here's this guy from West Orange, you know, down near Beaumont, and here you are in the New York, the Big Apple, playing for the Yankees.
That time.
Yeah.
And there was a guy starting a book on me, and I think that's what he called it, from Orange to the Big Apple.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we never finished that thing. I need to get back with him, and a lot of it was about the stuff we've talked about. But one of the big deals was, that was, of course, Mr. October's first year.
Mm-hmm. Reggie Jackson.
Well, his last year there, and Dave Winfield's first. So when I first met Reggie, I always tell that story. He shook my hand, looked at me from head to toe, you know, up and down. And I'm like, well, this son of a gun, you know. You know how Reggie would. That's just how he was.
Oh, yeah.
His respect. My first game played was in Kansas City. He said, come run with me. And he knew it was my first game, so we ran in the outfield with Josh. He wasn't a Ricky Henderson, we'll say it that way. But he said, just relax, go out, play how you play to get here, and you will be okay. You mm-hmm. know, that little talk, I went my first two at-bats, I got hit. Mm. And the best ball I hit a line drive out left. I thought I had a triple. There's this little slow guy out there named Willie Wilson caught the ball at the wall and left. And I'm like, well, I see now this is going to be a tough league to play. That would have been a triple. He just ran it down, not even having to run fast.
Welcome to the big leagues.
Welcome to the big leagues. I want to make people take that right turn.
Exactly.
Well, Andre, man, I can't begin to tell you how great this has been. We enjoyed the conversation, man, and just thanks for taking some time out. Congrats on a great career at Texas with the Yankees, and congrats on a great family. We appreciate you, man.
Okay, and hey, Kurt,
yes.
Thanks for the press. You helped me get away from there, too. So.
Well, you're one hell of a guy, and I just have loved covering you and watching your career, and just, you know, thanks again, like I said, saying all the best to you and your family in the future. Okay, hope we run into each other sometime again.
I'll be back in the area. I'll have to meet up with you guys for real.
That sounds good.
That'll be great.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Okay, Kurt.
Have a great day.
All right.
Bye-bye.
You.
Thanks.
You too.
On Second Thought.
You know, Duck, I love Longhorn legends like Andre Robertson, who keeps it real, and he's not, you know, he had no real, you know, ill modesty. It's real modesty.
Yeah, no, he's a humble guy. That was a fun interview.
That was a great interview. Let's keep it going. Our guy John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, who's an inductee to the Texas Sports Hall of Fame media room. He congrats on that, John. How are you today?
I'm doing great, guys. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It is going to be a great night at AT&T Stadium in Dallas when we do our second class of the Texas Sports Hall of Fame, and I think that I'm sorry, Kirk's not a part of it. I feel very strongly Kirk will be the next one, and I don't
of course.
Think you'll have to wait 14 years.
Well, I'm just glad you're going in. You're going in with Shereen Williams, Fort Worth Star-Telegram.
Randy Galloway,
Dallas Morning News writer. Brad Sham, the voice of the Dallas Cowboys.
Denny Freeman,
my
long
favorite.
Time AP sports editor.
And Eric Nadel,
voice of the Raiders. That's pretty distinguished class. That's pretty nice company, John.
It is, and we don't want to leave out the late, great Frank Gleiber, who I'm
wow.
sure I knew growing up in Waco as a diehard Cowboys fan. I listened and watched Frank Gleiber. And Brad Sham, who was hired and given his break back. Frank Gleiber, the voice of the Cowboys for more than 30 years. I remember when Brad was a sideline reporter, and it's skewered to the Metroplex. I'm the only one, so I feel like I'm representing the rest of Texas in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
It's a big state, man.
I just want to know why you don't get a yellow blazer. You should get a yellow blazer, John.
Kirk, they're going to give us a ring. They want our ring size.
Wow.
I don't have a clue. And when I get back from the combine, I'm going to have to go to a jeweler and get my ring size and send it to them. So I don't have a high school ring. I don't have a Baylor ring.
No way.
Only thing I got is ring around the collar.
Oh, my God. So this should be your first ring. And once you get that ring, John, I want to make sure you show it to Bill O'Brien and show him what a championship Hall of Fame ring looks like.
Wow.
Okay. Can you
too
do
soon.
That? Can
too
you
soon.
No, it's not too soon. So
I think that the last time he saw Bill Belichick. He saw Belichick's ring, so he does know what one looks like. But every time he gets mad at me, I'm going to flash it.
I love it. Here well, it you is. Know what? John is at the NFL Rookie Scouting Combine in Indianapolis, which is just a showcase, just a must-watch on NFL Network. I love it. John, of particular interest to our people in Austin, you were able to chat a day ago with Devin Duvernay and one Colin Johnson of the Texas Longhorns. Colin announced on Tuesday that he would not be participating in running drills because of a hip flexor. How does that hurt his stock? Because he was already trending downward.
As you guys know, looking back, he would have been better to come out last year. Mm-hmm. He said that he talked to his mentors and his dad, and has no regrets, and I hope the Longhorns fans appreciate him staying in school. And I know he got hurt; it was a disappointing season. But if the key to this, they've got tape to look at. They send him to doctors. They see his injury. He can work out at the Longhorns Pro Day. I think it's April 1st. Mm-hmm. He can have private workouts.
Right.
There's a lot of things he can do between now and the draft to improve his situation. He's disappointed about it. And as people ask him, you ever considered moving a tight end because he's the tallest receiver in the draft in a shade over 6'5". So I felt sorry for him, but he answered all the questions right. Hopefully in Austin he'll have a great Pro Day. Now, Duvernay, one of the things that people like about him is that he can play inside or outside. And that's important when you got versatility.
Mm-hmm.
Every team is looking for versatility at a lot of positions. So if you can do that, that really enhances your stock. The problem for Devin Duvernay and Colin Johnson, they have picked a terrible year to be in the draft.
Amen.
This is maybe the greatest class of wide receivers, may not be the most productive, but going into the draft, it may be the best and deepest class of wide receivers there's ever been. So unless you're the elite of the elite, like Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb and Laviska Shenault and those guys,
mm-hmm.
you may go third round any other year. You're going to go fourth this year, but it's still, there's going to be so many receivers drafted, it's going to make our heads spin.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I mean, Alabama's got a couple of them, and they're just all over the place. So I love Devin Duvernay. I know Cedric does too. He barely ever dropped a pass, and he's as tough as they come. What have you gotten to see them, see Devin in his games? I know you were usually working on weekends and stuff. I don't know if you ever got to see Duvernay play.
Yeah, the only games I watched him in were against Baylor, where he's supposed to have gone, and we were happy to.
Yeah.
Give him to the Longhorns, and I think Baylor only beat him one time. That was this past season.
Oh, yeah.
And he moved inside. He was talking about moving inside mostly this year.
Yeah, playing the slot.
And how much better it fit his game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Colin Johnson could never play inside.
No.
He was tall.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking about working with former NFL receiver Ricky Prohl on helping him get in and out of his breaks, because when you're as tall as he is, it's harder to make those quick cuts.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's been working really hard on that, because at the Pros Day he wants to show them that he can do it, where Duvernay's already showed him. It's like Joe Burrow said. They said, why are you not working out? He said, my workouts are on tape.
Love it.
Exactly.
Any game I played. And Duvernay will work out, and he'll go again at the Pro Day, I'm sure, because when you're a receiver this year, you need to take every opportunity you can to prove yourself, because if you slip around, it's going to cost you money. You don't want to slip around.
Mm-hmm.
Based on that, and hopefully Colin Johnson will have a good workout when he does work out and not continue to fall.
So what are you hearing on both of those guys? Is like third round too early for a Devin Duvernay?
I don't think third round's too early for Duvernay.
Yeah.
Now, another year, it might be a second round.
Yeah.
But the fact that he can play inside or outside, that's definitely going to benefit him. You know, it's almost embarrassing that the NFL talks about how much stock it puts in a player's career. And the fact is, most of what they judge is based on players in their underwear.
Mm-hmm.
And when Duvernay's running routes and nobody's covering him, it's going to be a little bit easier than when he's going up against Oklahoma and Baylor and other teams in the Big 12. And so there's no excuse not to excel unless you happen to get a quarterback who's off target that day. But I think they're smart enough to know what the difference is. And then if you don't mm-hmm. have a good combine, you can always come back at your pro day. A lot of guys, when they do well at the combine, they rest on it. I said, well, I'm not going to run again. I'm not going to lift again because mine was great. Like if Henry Ruggs III, the wide receiver from Alabama, does indeed run in the 4.2s and he's shooting for John Ross's 2017 record of 4.22, if he breaks it, we ain't seeing him run again until he's in the NFL.
Exactly. Well, John, let's talk about the Texans. I know the big news coming out of there is Bill O'Brien ceding play calling duties, offensive coordinator Tim Kelly. Was that a shock in H-Town? And what do you think O'Brien's thought process was in that decision?
We did before they bring coaches in for their session in front of all the media. Bill O'Brien did a private one with three of us who are here from Houston. Mm-hmm. And because we haven't talked to him since he did his wrap-up after the playoff loss at Kansas City. And a lot of things have happened with the Texans that we wanted to ask him about. So, obviously, we don't want to ask him in front of the masses about firing the cap guy and firing an outside linebacker and elevating an assistant secondary coach. So he talked to us off the side, and his VP of Communications, Amy Pausick, said, okay, guys, two more questions. He's got to get inside. Somebody barked one, and then I said, wait a minute, Bill, by the way, have you given up any more thought about letting Kelly call the plays? Mm-hmm. And I thought he'd say no. Tim and I, it's a joint deal and all that. And right. He hesitates and goes, Timmy's going to call the plays. And I'm like, whoa. So I'm recording with my phone. I have to turn it around. I have to tweet it immediately while he's talking about Tim Kelly.
Right.
Now, I know how much he likes Tim. Tim's 33. He's been with O'Brien since he was a GA at Penn State. So this is his ninth year. So obviously he can put up with O'Brien's BS. He can put up with his temper. He's got thick skin. And I know O'Brien thinks highly about him because he told me a couple of years ago how talented he was. And I know people in the office talked about his fanatical work ethic. And he's worked different positions, beginning with quality control. So I thought last year, I told people when everybody's going, let somebody else call plays. Mm-hmm. The fact is, for everybody who was a critic of O'Brien as a play caller, and I wrote about this Sunday, when Will Fuller was healthy, they were the eighth highest scored team in the league. They were the seventh best offense in the league. And when Will Fuller didn't play, they dropped down and were ranked in the 20s. So O'Brien looks a whole lot smarter as a play caller with Will Fuller back. And if Fuller were to stay healthy for 16 games in the last year of his contract, which he's never done, he'd make Tim Kelly look like a genius.
Mm-hmm.
So we always thought O'Brien's ego and the relationship he has with Watson and how much he likes calling plays, that he wouldn't give it up. But we said if he does with Kelly what he did with George Godsey in 2015, when Godsey was a quarterback coach, next year he was a coordinator and he let him call plays. That backfired that season, and O'Brien took it back over and fired Godsey a year later. So they hope it works out better. But, you know, Kelly's been involved in the game plan for the last few years, and he's active on game day. So in retrospect, I'm not, but that was a bombshell.
Yeah.
Because fans and media have just been clamoring for it now for the last 2 years. But they're not a bad offensive team like some people seem to think, especially media and fans. And when you lay it out to them about how much better they are with Fuller, they want to hear it. It's like I told O'Brien yesterday. I said, well, now we've got somebody new to blame. He goes, no, you'll find a way to blame me. And I said, you're right.
That's true. Well, you know, I know you do a mock draft, you and Aaron Wilson, and I think you had, who was it, Cameron Dantzler, cornerback from Mississippi State. As the Texans' first pick in the second round. They don't have a first-round pick. Is that right? And why do you feel that way?
Well, first of all, Kirk, we've already done four mock drafts.
Right, I'm trying
to move it around. I know what positions they need. They need a cornerback. And if they could get another pass rusher, they're desperate for that. And then, as I pointed out the previous Sunday in a column, when you've got Fuller, who's injured every year going into the last year of his contract, and then you might think seriously in mm-hmm. a great receivers draft, drafting a receiver. And Kenny Stills, who did well as the third receiver, also going into the last year of his contract. So you might think, because there's, I listed five receivers, beginning with A.J. Brown of Tennessee and D.K. Metcalf of Seattle and Terry McLaurin of Washington in the third. I listed receivers who did really well as rookies, who were drafted after the first round, and this draft's even better. So what if there's a receiver, when they make the pick in the 57th in the second round, that they have a first-round grade on, and the corners and the pass rushers they don't? Can they afford to bypass that receiver, even though they've got three? Well, considering Fuller's injury history, they better do it. But considering how bad their corners were, I don't know how they can ignore it.
Yeah.
And every week, I've looked to see a corner. There, it's not a good year for cornerbacks if you want them to go in a top 15 or 20. They're just not. But when you get to the bottom of the first round, second, third round, there's going to be a run on them. And that's what the Texans need. As it should be, after the compensatory picks are awarded next month, the Texans should have eight. And that would be their two, their three, two fours, a five, a six, and three sevens. And I think because Trader Bill, the general manager, has made so many deals since he became the general manager without the title in June, I expect him to make deals on draft day. I expect him to be active in free agency. And I know they need corners, so I'm pretty sure that's an area that's going to be targeted.
So you think they might could finagle a first-round pick out of these drafts?
It wouldn't surprise me if they found somebody at the bottom of the first round. Now, next year they don't have a one or two, so they can't trade a three next year. But I could see them this year trading maybe a player and a two or three, depending on what they do in free agency. He's not going to make a stupid pick. Like this year, if they hadn't traded for Laremy Tunsil at left tackle or Kenny Stills at receiver, they wouldn't have been in the playoffs. They'd had a losing record. Both those guys played key roles in helping them win the division. So what in a good year for offensive tackles, who is as good as Tunsil? Pro Football Focus has Tunsil as the best tackle coming out of college in the last 5 years, and there's not a Tunsil in this group, and you're picking 26. So what would you have to do to trade up to try to get one of the top two or three guys? So that's the reason they made that deal, and they figured they're going to be picking low again next year. And the last time they didn't have first and second picks, they drafted Justin Reed in the third round, so that's something they need to do next year. And with free agency the way it is, the draft picks are not as valuable as they used to be. And one other thing about most of these deals they've made, they're not making deals for guys who are 30 on the last year of their contract. Like Tunsil turned 25 right when they traded for him. And so he's going to have a couple of contracts. So all I know is there's two things they kept looking for I don't have to worry about and speculate on: quarterback and left tackle.
Well, John, let's talk about the face of the franchise that's not named Deshaun Watson, J.J. Watt. Been hurt a lot lately, and are his best days behind him? And with Jadeveon Clowney no longer in the mix, how hard do they look at an impact guy up front?
Well, Cedric, 2 years ago, 3 years ago when he got hurt, people asked the same question. He came back, had 16 sacks. First team All-Pro, played 16 games. And then last year, you know, he suffered the torn pec, and he came back at the end of the year, and he played really well. You can't look at the sacks. Pro Football Focus talked about how many of all the players get blocked by two or more people. He was by far the one that got the most pressure on the quarterback. And had he played the whole season, he would have blown away everybody. So looking at sacks, they didn't have a big year, but he's just going to be 31. He's in phenomenal shape. He's got no injury now. And so they're counting on him. Whitney Merciless, the other outside player. They've got a kid, Duke Ejiofor, who was a rookie 2 years ago. They were planning on making a big jump, blew out his Achilles in off-season program. He's 100%. And in the Seattle trade for Clowney, they acquired an outside linebacker named Jacob Martin, who had more sacks than Clowney did because Clowney was hurt a lot. And Clowney's not a great pass rusher, and that's why they weren't going to pay him $100 million. He's
Don't
a great run
him.
Player and a good pass rusher, and they just weren't going to do it. Now Seattle's not going to do it either. And I hope for Clowney, because I like the guy, that he may have to take a one-year deal, stay healthy, prove himself, because after being hurt so much last year and having one great game, I don't see a team, even one with a lot of money under the cap, giving him $100 million. I just don't see it. So they've got some prospects, but they still got to get another one. Charles Minihu, who going into his second season, most players make their biggest improvement between the first and second season unless they got IQs of a plant. Then it may take another year. Minihu doesn't. They've got high hopes for him. Him, like Watt, Merciless, Ojafor, and Jacob Martin are all outside guys. They need somebody who could give them, say, five sacks inside. They don't have anybody. But Omenihu's another one that they're really high on. That's why corner is their primary need, mm-hmm. because they have candidates. They don't even have, in my mind, candidates at corner. They've got two starters, Lonnie Johnson Jr. and Gary Conley. And Johnson was benched near the end of the year and put on special teams. And Conley was dumped by the Raiders, and he played better for the Texans than the Raiders. But they still need another one because I think they're going to lose Bradley Roby. But they will have to target defense, Cedric, as they targeted the offense last offseason.
And how about running back? Are they comfortable where they are, or a bunch of running backs in this class, yeah. too?
Carlos Hyde was good last year.
Yep.
They love Duke Johnson, who mm-hmm. they traded what will be a third-round compensatory pick that they'll get from Kansas City because of the Tyrann Mathieu leaving the free agency.
Right.
And they've tried to sign Carlos Hyde. You know, he bounced around the league like a pinball, mm-hmm. had the best season of his career, fit perfectly with the kind of scheme they run. I don't know what they offered. He hadn't taken it. He better be careful.
Oh,
he'll
yeah.
be making a minimum somewhere. And the other backs they have, they like, they're great special teams players, but they don't carry the ball much. So I think if they saw somebody, whether in free agency or low in the draft, mm-hmm. that they thought had some potential, they might take them. But they, with Deshaun Watson throwing the ball so much, you know, you run the ball to take the pressure off him. When Will, this is another thing about Will Fuller. When Fuller played, their stats in every way on offense were better by far, except one, rushing. They were not bad when Fuller played. They just threw the ball more.
Mm-hmm.
But when Fuller didn't play, and they went back to running a whole lot more, and they averaged almost seven fewer points, a lot of fewer yards. They had more sacks, everything. So that's why I think they need a receiver. Could be somebody in free agency. Could be somebody, you know, like, say Duvernay
yeah.
was available. I don't think they'd take one in the third. I think they'd take DBs
right.
or a pass rusher.
Right.
But what if Duvernay slipped to the fourth round?
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, man.
So that's the kind of guy they could get
yeah.
who is better than that round. And most receivers would love the opportunity to play with Deshaun Watson, especially. Mm-hmm. When the other two guys are in last year of their contract.
Well, he's got speed, as we know, as a sprint champion, and he's tough as they come here. You know, we saw him run over Grant Delpit, you know, in the LSU game. So, you know, obviously we're probably a little biased, but, you know, he's the real deal. Just jumping around a little bit, where do you think Tom Brady ends up?
I've been thinking he's going to end up back in New England like everybody else. But
me too.
People now are starting – if you look at the Patriots – offense. Julian Edelman, I think, is going to be 33. He was hurt a lot last year. Nikhil Harry, who was a rookie, missed half the year at receiver. Mm-hmm. Now, he should improve going into his second year. They've tried Antonio Brown, Josh Gordon. They were caught off guard by Gronkowski retiring, and they were not able to replace him.
Right.
And then they had injuries in the offensive line, and now their guard, Joe Thuney, who's really good, they're not going to pay a guard big money in free agency. People think he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So if he were to go back there, Belichick would have to spend a lot more money in free agency than he likes to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if, say, I believe that Mark Davis, who made John Gruden a preposterous offer, mm-hmm. $20 million a year for 10 years, when he had turned down $10 million for 5 years multiple times, moving to Vegas, even though he doesn't need Brady, sell out mm-hmm. every game, adding Tom Brady to that offense at the expense of Derek Carr, played pretty well, But everything Brady wants is there. A good offensive line, a good running game.
Great tight end.
Good tight end.
Waller's
don't
good.
Don't have wide receivers.
Right.
But they have a high pick where they could get Jerry Jeudy or CeeDee Lamb in all likelihood. And if they gave him money, like, say, $35 million for 2 years, I think he's gone.
That's sexy.
Wow. Well, he wants to
he
be loved.
He wouldn't go to the Chargers. Their offensive line's awful.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of speculation about Tennessee. They want Ryan Tannehill. They could get him for twice as little as they
cheap.
Pay.
Yes.
Brady. Mm-hmm. And Brady's got to be careful about the system.
Yeah.
Because the system has got to be tailored to him. He can't, at 43, go in and learn a new system that doesn't fit what he does well, which is think, get rid of the ball quick, and get rid of it, be accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my last one for you, John. Where do you think my guy Philip Rivers ends up?
Indianapolis. Seems like a natural because Frank Reich worked with him in San Diego, and then they have a great relationship. Kobe Brissett was not very good. Had one great game against the Texans early, got hurt, didn't play well. They got a great offensive line. You know, Rivers is immobile.
Good running
backs.
They got
a good enough running game, good enough tight end, and they also have a high pick that they could use on a wide receiver like Henry Ruggs III,
right,
who may run in the 4.2s. If you had T.Y. Hilton running in the 4.3s, Paris Campbell 4.3s, Ruggs at 4.2 for Rivers, you know, that'd be a pretty formidable receiving core. So that seems like a natural fit to me.
Mm-hmm.
And people are talking about Tampa. No way. Bruce Arians throws the ball down the field. He sends out five receivers. He plays deep drops. His quarterbacks better be able to avoid the rush and get the ball down the field.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not Rivers' strength right now.
Yeah. Are you sold on Joe Burrow? Is he going to be the first pick?
He's going to be the first pick, and except for those small hands, only 9-inch hands.
Just like Patrick Mahomes.
One of the dumbest things that I have ever seen.
Me too, man.
The only time anybody mentions a quarterback's right hand is at the combine. It's never mentioned again. I remember in 2017, all this hand-wringing because of this second-round pick from Texas Tech who's trying to improve his stock from a low two to a mid two. His hands were too small. And everybody said, well, that kid's got a big arm and big stats, but he's playing in an air raid system. That's never going to work. Cliff Kingsbury's never had a great quarterback, and his hands are too small, and the rest is history.
Yeah. How about the CBA agreement? Are the players going to vote for the 17-game schedule?
They're going to go to 17 games. They're going to the extra playoff. The reason they haven't approved it right now, players are trying to get more money because they know. The NFL has a new TV agreement coming up, and they know the ratings are going to go down because of the election, the Trump factor, just as they were 4 years ago. And even though they don't want to go into a TV negotiation with ratings down, even though everybody knows about the Trump factor, so they want to have labor peace when they sit down with the league and go, look, it's not going to be a lockout. It's not going to be a strike. Everything's hunky-dory for 10 years. Show us what you got, and they'll get record-breaking money. They get $225 million per team right now, and that's just from network TV, not counting streaming and radio deals. And, oh, to be an NFL owner. I can't believe you guys haven't asked me about the Astros. Jeez.
That's coming. That's coming. So, the players are going to take it, right?
That is last question. I thought that was your last question.
The players are going to take it, right? They're going to take the deal?
Yeah, they'll take the deal. Now, it could go a couple of weeks. League meetings are at the end of March. They'd like to have it done by then, but the longer they wait, the more they're open, the NFL sweetened the pie. The NFL says, hey, we'll just play next season. If it doesn't work, we'll lock you out like we did in 2011. You can decertify and all that.
Uh-huh.
But the fact is, they're not going to miss any games.
And what's the Trump factor? What's specifically the Trump factor?
Ratings and the debates and everything skyrocketed. Those ratings in NFL and all sports plummeted because of the Trump factor.
Because you think he'll resurrect the Kaepernick controversy?
Of course he will.
During the campaign?
He'll resonate. He may have Putin out there on the debate stage on his side. What would that do for the ratings? Plus, with the Russians manipulating everything, they might as well manipulate the TV ratings.
Why not?
And then the last one I have, Matt Rhule. Is he going to go 16-0?
Stop it.
I know he's your guy.
I don't think the first year he will. Maybe the second. Well, that, let's see, Kirk. That would be 19-0.
Yeah, 19.
He was, when he came up to interview yesterday.
Yeah.
He knew Cam Newton questions were coming.
Sure.
Cam Newton had surgery on his foot in December, and he's trying to rehab in Atlanta and in Charlotte. And most people think he won't be back. They'll try to trade him, but you can't trade for a quarterback coming off foot surgery.
Yeah.
He's 30 years old.
Right.
So they could cut him. Now, he said he wants to coach him, but he kept pointing about his health.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm him, and if they're at number seven, and they believe Tua, by the way, I just found out it's not Tagovailoa. It's Tagovailoa.
Tagovailoa.
Pronunciation on here, and I'm like,
as long as I spell it right.
We call him two on the podcast. So
that's better.
Two. And in columns.
Yeah. And
so you think they might take him? He might take two at number seven?
Well, he may go to Miami at five. He would have to trade up.
Yeah.
What if he loved Justin Herbert from Oregon?
Mm-hmm.
Then he might be able to get him. But you got to worry about the Chargers at six. I don't think there's any way Panthers can stay at seven and get one of those big three.
Right.
But he's a new coach. He has control. If he wants a rookie quarterback, he'll get him. And I think they're going to struggle this year. And then Matt Rhule will gradually make the team better. And if he doesn't, mm-hmm. he decides to come back to college football, I believe teams will be lining up to get him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you're off the Astros bandwagon?
No, I'm never off the Astros bandwagon. I'm doing a column for tomorrow on University of Houston. Left tackle Josh Jones, who just was a tremendous interview, and he's a good prospect, first-round pick.
Right.
Probably the only player from a Texas school to be taken in the first round.
Really?
And somebody saw a tattoo and said, is that an Astros tattoo? And he said, yes, it is. And before you ask, I'm not going there.
Love him.
And he said, well, are you still a fan? Yes, I'm a fan. Nothing like watching James Harden score 40. I'm a fan of my teams.
Well, Tillman Fertitta told me Monday that he's not worried about the Western Conference, so he's got a lot of confidence.
You better get worried.
So,
well, yeah. He better get worried. That's damn sure. He can play small ball regular season.
Oh, yeah.
Better be able to post it up in the playoffs with all those big men.
Not going to happen.
Different game.
John, but, man, we appreciate you. Always a pleasure. Congrats on the honor, and we'll catch up again around draft time, sir.
Cedric, Kirk, it's my pleasure. Thank you guys for having me. Keep up the great work.
Well, get working on that Hall of Fame speech, and congratulations. Thank you, John.
On Second Thought.
That will do it for episode 170 on Second Thought. We will have to thank our good friend John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, also Longhorn legend Andre Robertson. For the Duck Kirk Bowles, I'm Seth Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.